If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 107. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks to Sherry Ott about her life on the road as a solo woman traveler.
I got my bags packed on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. I'm looking real good in my passport photo.
Oh, no.
15-hour flight. Oh, I don't think I'll ever be coming home. You know I love it. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. The first news story I have today is from a story I saw on Gadling.com, The Horrible Reason Why Americans Don't Take All Their Vacation Days. There's a new study that came out called No Vacation Nation, written by Rebecca Ray and John Schmidt of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. In case you are already unaware, Americans tend to take fewer vacation days than other developed countries. 10% of full-time employees in the America get no vacation. 60% of part-time employees in America get no vacation. And Americans who do get vacation take only 12 days a year on average, which is below the 20 guaranteed by residents of Great Britain, the 24 for residents of Germany, and the 30 for residents of France. So check out that study. Both of the two next stories have to do with the new airline Virgin America. The first one is a press release from Virgin America, which says that Virgin America and its partner Aircel plan to launch in-flight broadband connectivity service over the U.S. So they're planning on offering service so that you could use your laptop to connect to the internet while you are on the plane. That is of great interest to travelers like me who are internet addicts. And the second news story is a review of Virgin America from Adam Curry. Some of you may know that I'm a part of Adam Curry's Podshow Network, and he has been a longtime fan of Virgin Atlantic, recently flew on Virgin America, and unfortunately didn't have a great experience. Partially it was the configuration of the seats for somebody who's 6'3", which happens to be my size also, and he's still recommending JetBlue instead of Virgin America. So check out that story. Also, I'll put links to all three stories on the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Sherry Ott, who has come to talk about quite a journey that she's been on for the last... How long have you been traveling now, Sherry?
Just a little over a year. I had my year anniversary on September 8th.
Okay. And Sherry is obviously a woman, and you've been traveling by yourself all over the world. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And may I speak for your mother here in saying, are you crazy? How did you, what made you go on this kind of an adventure, and how did this start?
Oh, wow. It was a big decision, and it was actually one a long time in coming and a lot of planning, of course. I would say one of the first things to know is probably I'm 37 years old. The first time I ever got a passport and went out of the country, I was 30 years old.
Okay.
So I'm a relatively new traveler. There are many different reasons why I decided to do this, but one of them was also because when I did go out of the country when I was 30, I had so much fun, and I just kind of got the bug that every trip after that, I made sure that I went out of the country and stayed as long as I possibly could, as long as my job would allow. And it never seemed to be enough time. I never, ever wanted to come home. So there was that aspect where I always wanted to see more. And I think the other reasons why I decided to do this are a couple things. I suppose I didn't want to be 65 years old and going and climbing Kilimanjaro or doing this long-term travel by myself. So I felt like if I could just take a little mini retirement, take a break from about 15 years of life in the corporate world, and go see the world. That's what I wanted to do. And then finally, I think I did it because it was challenging. The thought of it was daunting to me. And I'm kind of a challenge junkie, I suppose. And so, but not like the challenge junkie that likes to ski down a mountain at, you know, at breakneck speed. I like to just challenge myself with smaller things, I suppose, maybe less, I don't know, life-threatening things. But the thought of living out of a suitcase for a year, going off on my own, traveling to different countries, really having never done anything like that before, was sounding like the ultimate challenge to me. I wanted to see if I could do it.
And I attempted to speak for your mother there at the beginning. What did your friends and family say?
Oh, boy. My friends were all very excited about it, I would say.
Okay.
My family, that was probably a little bit of another story. I had planned this probably a good year in advance and had told my parents that this is what I was going to do a year in advance. And the first reaction, of course, was not very positive. I think they just kind of looked at me rather confused.
And you can't and retire. You were not 65.
Yes. My mother's comment, I'll never forget this, was, well, why would you want to go, you know, around the world for a year when there's so many places to see in the United States?
Okay.
It's a very good question, I suppose. But for me, the world called. I really didn't have any interest in traveling through the United States. I'd done some as a kid, but I really felt the pull of other countries. So, and then my dad's comment, and still to this day, every time I talk to him is, so have you decided what you're going to do when you come back? So that was a little bit unnerving, and is unnerving, actually, every time I talk to him. But they both eventually got used to it after a year of planning and preparation. And eventually they were actually in New York City to send me off and help me get everything packed up, and were very positive about it in the end, I would say.
Okay. Was there a moment on your trip or moments on your trip where you thought maybe your mother was right? When did you think, gee, maybe this wasn't such a good idea?
Oh, gosh. I would say really early on. And it was the first time I was alone on the trip. I left New York City and flew to Kenya with some friends.
Oh, you jumped right in then. Okay.
Yeah, I did. But it was an easy jump because I was with friends, and I was with a friend specifically who grew up in Nairobi. And so They set all of our travel up. It was a great way to kind of get into this mode of travel. And then after I left them, my sister came and joined me, and we climbed Kilimanjaro. And so my sister and I traveled together through Tanzania just a little bit while we were hiking. And then we both came to Cape Town in South Africa, and she left me. And the day she left me, I went and checked myself into my very first hostel. And I got into my room and I just sat there and cried, honestly, because this was really the first time I was alone. It's the first time I'd ever been in a hostel. I had no idea what I was going to do in this town. I didn't know a single person. It was just very daunting. And one of those, like, I didn't know how I was ever going to survive doing this for a year.
And what did you do next?
I went to an internet
cafe. You didn't go home. You didn't give up.
No, you know, actually that day was very memorable to me because after I kind of got over the shock of being alone and living in a hostel, I went to an internet cafe, honestly, and I work on my blog a lot, and I started writing, and I emailed friends, and it made me feel much better, and I uploaded pictures, and I was probably there, honestly, for about, I don't know, 7 hours that day. And I came back to the hostel, and I talked to the young girls behind the desk, who were very nice, and had told them that I wanted to go see Robben Island. Uh-huh. And they said, oh, well, if you want to go see Robben Island, you need to make a reservation early because it gets filled up.
And
I said, great, I'll do it this
prison
weekend.
Where Nelson Mandela was.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A very good sight to see, I would say. So they called for me and made a reservation for me that weekend. There was a person behind me, actually, it was a couple, but they were friends, a man and a woman from Wales, actually, traveling together. And the man came up and said, I hope you don't mind, but I've been listening to your conversation and we'd really like to go too. Is it okay if we go with you, if we see if they have extra tickets? And I said, okay, sure. And that was the beginning of an amazing friendship that I ended up traveling with them for, I don't know, about the next 4 or 5 days through Cape Town, and we became great friends. So it was just one of these things where it was like, you know, things always work themselves out. And that was probably my first lesson in that. Just when you think that you can't do it, or that it's too hard, or that you're going to hate it, everything works itself out. At least it has so far for me.
That's great.
Yeah.
What were the moments that you were glad you hadn't listened to your mother's advice? What are the things that stand out? We've talked a little bit before we started recording about there's a little bit of a haze here over after you've been traveling for a whole year. What stands out from that memory?
Oh, man. There are a number of things that stand out, honestly. So I'll run down a few, I suppose. If I think about early on traveling through New Zealand, backpacking through New Zealand on my own, actually, and meeting people there, but standing on the Franz Josef Glacier and eating lunch and thinking to myself, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm not in some corporate meeting right now, eating my lunch, which is what my normal life would be like.
Or the pre-meeting to prepare for the meeting.
Yes, you're right. And with my BlackBerry, you know, pretty much glued to my hand. So that was probably one of my first memories, but the glacier was beautiful. I would also say petting tigers in Thailand, just crazy adventures, going out and petting these live tigers at some, it was a monastery, I think, outside of wherever the bridge over the River Kwai is. Now I can't even remember.
Mm-hmm.
Kinchanaburi. I'm sure I'm murdering the pronunciation. But that was really memorable to me. It was the first time I ever had to sign a...
release?
Yes, thank you. First time I had to sign a release.
If the tiger eats you, you won't sue us?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, which was terrifying to me because I had already done a lot of really stupid things and no one made me sign a release before. So petting tigers, I would say going through the hill tribes of both of northern Thailand, northern Vietnam was very memorable. In Morocco, going to see the goats that climb in the trees.
Excuse me?
Crazy things, yes. There are goats that climb trees. And I was on a mission to go find them. And I did, which was fun. It was just a fun adventure.
It sounds like an old Monty Python sketch, actually.
Yeah, it felt like it, honestly. I felt like I was on the quest for the Holy Grail.
It
was fun.
Okay.
Oh, I know all the questions, trust me.
I'm just trying to picture this. I hope you have a picture of that one.
I do have pictures on the website.
Oh, actually, we didn't mention your blog. We should have done that at the beginning. We'll do that again at the end. You have chronicled your trip.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you get... Tell us where you've
been. Yes, I have. It's a whole blog, and it's called www.otsworld.com. OTTSWORLD.com.
Okay, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes, obviously.
Yeah, so it has photographs from all over the world and tons of stories about, not necessarily about where to stay or here's where to eat or anything like that. It's more of my experiences, my thoughts, the people I meet, the weird things that I notice, things like that. So.
Okay. Anything else that stands out, again, that rises above the noise for just so glad you did this trip?
I would say, there might be a few others. Actually, my most recent experience, and it's easy because it was recent, but I was in India for the last 5 weeks. And I wasn't really traveling through India as much as I decided, and this was never on my original plan, but I decided that I was going to do volunteer work.
Okay.
And I went to India for 4 weeks in Delhi to teach English and computers to young adults there that were obviously... had dropped out of school for reasons, all kinds of different reasons, but we're trying to get back into it. So India itself was something of a huge accomplishment, I guess, for me, because when I started out on the trip a year ago, people asked me if I was going to India, and I said, no, I'm way too intimidated to go to India, because I had heard so many things about it, and I didn't want to travel there as a single female, and I would just, it was too daunting for me. And the fact that then, you know, 10 months later, I decide I want to go to India, and it was such a great experience to do the volunteer work and give something back after you had seen the world, that really stood out to me. I'm very happy I did it.
Okay. Other than Cape Town in the hostel, are there other times that you felt furthest from home?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Just have to think of which times. I would definitely say there was a time I was in Thailand, in northern Thailand, and I was trekking with a guide as well as a friend who happened to be visiting me from New York. We were trekking through the hill tribes and staying with local tribes, basically, which is a very popular thing to do in northern Thailand, and I highly recommend it. It's really fun. But one of the things we did there was when we got into one of the villages, they were all excited because they had caught a delicacy that day, which happened to be rat. And they were excited to show it to us and basically cook it up for us. So it was one of those moments where you're just like, you're trying to explain to them that in New York City, you don't eat rats. You know, in fact, there are many rats. And I was trying to tell them that there are many big rats in the subways in New York City. And the man, in all seriousness, asked me, well, do you eat them? And I just looked at him and I'm like, no, we don't eat them. But that night I ended up eating rat with the locals. And it was just one of those weird experiences that, you know, you obviously would never, ever have at home. And you feel like you're really out there in the middle of the world. So it was fun. And it tastes like chicken, just like everything else.
I was going to ask.
It's a little daunting at first, but it was actually pretty good.
We have a friend who doesn't eat chicken, and I kid her, she doesn't know anything tastes like.
Oh.
Actually, while we're talking about food, other strange experiences in terms of the things that you've eaten that you never thought you would.
Oh, gosh. Rat was definitely probably highest on the list, I have to say. Other things. There are a lot of things that I ate that honestly I don't know what they were. Because sure. One of my tactics with dealing with trying new things is you just don't ask questions. And especially when it comes to food and you're in a local market in some northern town in Vietnam or Thailand or whatever, and everything looks really good, but it's some kind of meat and you're kind of thinking, you don't want to know what kind of meat it is. Let me just eat it and enjoy it. And I'm better off if I don't know. So there are many things that I ate that I honestly don't know what they were. Some good, some bad.
But I
encourage anyone to just try things because it's fun. And most of it has been really good. So, but I don't think I've had anything really crazy. I wanted to try to find bugs to eat in Thailand, but the night that we were trying to find them, when I had had enough beer that I would actually try one, we couldn't find the bug vendor. So we had to give up.
Any particular place that it really has left a mark on you? Some place that you would go back to? There's a special connection now.
There are probably two places right now that I would, well, one that I would go back to and one that I would just classify as a special place. The special place is probably Vietnam. It sticks out to me. Anywhere in Vietnam, probably even more northern Vietnam. I enjoyed Hanoi a lot. I enjoyed Sapa. And I enjoyed Vietnam so much, I believe, because it was very different. I loved Asia, but it had a lot of American history wrapped up in it. And since I'm from America, I found it very fascinating. It was just, the history was really interesting and in how they related to you, as well as it's still really a communist country, yet it seems to be kind of a free market communist country, if there is such a thing. So it was just interesting. It had a couple of things that made it really unique there to me. And I had the fortune to travel 5 weeks, actually a little more than 5 weeks, through Vietnam, really from north to south, and covered the whole country. So it was special to me. I don't know that I would go back because I'm the type of person that once I do one thing, I don't want to do it again.
Mm-hmm. I understand that.
So I feel like I've kind of done Vietnam now, and it was wonderful. The place right now that I think I would go back to, and yes, this is recent, but I also believe this would hold for a while, is India. The reason why India is because I did fall in love with it, but I was really there for 5 weeks in one specific area. Mm-hmm. And India is so big of a country and there's so much to see that I feel like there's a lot more that I want to see there. Up north into the Himalayas and the mountains, I'd like to go south to see the differences there. I think it would be really fascinating. India just holds a very special place to me right now, I suppose, but there's so much more to see there.
We're actually going to do a show coming up on volunteer travel, and I believe that there is a special connection when you go someplace and you work alongside people or with people. I don't know if that was your experience at all or not.
Yes, I had a very special connection. In fact, they pretty much had to tear me away from my class. Yeah, I had a very unique opportunity, though, I would say. I went into the experience thinking that I wasn't expecting a lot. Like, I had heard stories of volunteer vacations and volunteering that, you know, you're not going to go in there in 4 weeks and change the world or whatever, that you need to take little wins with you. And so I went in with that expectation. However, my placement, my assignment that I was working in happened to be rather unique because it was these young adults, about 18 to 20 or 16 to 20, I would say, that had dropped out of school. The local NGO had kind of found these kids that had a lot of potential but weren't in school and brought them to the NGO to continue their studies basically for free. And the unique thing was then I had a bunch of kids there that really, really wanted to learn. They were so eager to learn. It was overwhelming. So in 4 weeks of teaching them, I absolutely felt like I made a huge difference. Maybe not improving their grammar 100%, but I did teach them how to use articles correctly. And taught them other things around just culture in the United States or Western culture and business and interviews and little things like how to search on the internet and things like that, that I really believe I'd made an impact to them.
Excellent. So you're a woman traveling, oh, we say by yourself, but you've been traveling with others off and on, but certainly
yes,
sometimes all completely by yourself. Safety obviously comes up as an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Were there times, I think people are going to ask me if I don't ask you the question, you know, were there times that it was more scary than others? Were there places
yes,
you wouldn't go back to or wouldn't recommend that women go, for instance?
There's no place I would recommend that women just don't go.
Okay. At least that you went to.
Yes, mm-hmm, that's true. I always think that you can go somewhere if you don't know anyone or you're traveling on your own, but there are ways to be very smart about it. And so you're right. I didn't do this completely 100% on my own. I would say over the last year, about a third of the time, I had a friend that maybe came from the States on their 2-week vacation that came and joined me or something like that. So I traveled with friends.
Well,
maybe
a
third of the time.
What a great service.
No. It was great. I had a
to who
of
I'm not too sure exactly, but that just sounds terrific.
It works out for everyone. And then probably another third of the time, I traveled with people that I traveled or toured with people that who I recently met, and then a third of the time I traveled completely on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But the key is it's that middle one of traveling with people that you recently meet or touring with people that you recently meet. If there were countries that I was intimidated about going on my own, completely solo, then what I would do instead was, there was actually a tour company that I used that was very good. They offered extensive kind of cultural tours or around countries for 3 weeks, 4 weeks at a time sometimes. And I kind of call it glorified backpacking. It was very reasonably priced. You were put with a group. You had a tour guide, which basically was just someone who spoke the language there and knew their way around. You had an itinerary. They arranged all of the accommodation and the transportation, which are the two most stressful things to me to deal with when you're on your own. And you followed the tour through, but you landed in, say, a city. Say you landed in Cairo, and you had 3 days to do whatever you wanted. You could do stuff with the group if you wanted to. Nothing was really included. You could eat on your own. You could go out and explore on your own. You could go with a group. The tour guide that was with you just kind of recommended places to go and gave you a little orientation tour, and that was it. And then you were on your own. But by then you had these kind of group of friends that you were with, that you had been traveling with. And so it was great. So it really afforded me to be able to get into countries that I probably wouldn't have gone by myself, but with a group, or, you know, that left you some freedom to do what you wanted. It was perfect.
And what company were you working with to do that?
It's an Australian-based company called Intrepid Travel.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they do different classes of tours. They obviously do very, like, you know, high-end tours, mm-hmm, kind of middle-end tours. And then this was what they call their basics tour, which is what I call the glorified backpacking,
okay,
or backpacking with a group.
Yeah, I've read about it. I hadn't talked to anybody who'd been on one yet. Interesting.
I did three of them this year. Vietnam, Morocco, and Egypt.
Okay.
So in Vietnam, it was nice, but Morocco and Egypt, it was completely necessary. There's no way I wouldn't have wanted to be there on my own in those two countries.
Okay. Because of the cultural difference.
Yeah, it was definitely the two countries that I've had the most, the most difficulty with being a female.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of, and they told you really, don't go out once it gets dark at night. You cannot go out and walk by yourself. And that was for very good reason. So listen to the people that tell you that. Normally, it was a very aggressive place, I would say. So if you were walking by yourself, you would have a group of men probably following you, trying to sell you something, take you somewhere, whatever. And eventually, they were just really aggressive, and you had to be very forceful with saying no or leave me alone or whatever.
And I want to say that I was seeing this on your blog, talking about going into the marketplace in Egypt and really not seeing the women.
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing. In both those countries, Morocco and Egypt, both, there are just not many women out at all. Very rarely do you see any of them out. And you'd look around and there'd be these beautiful like coffee cafes, outdoor cafes, or bars, they called them, I guess. But it was all men. And so then I would go and sit down there and have my breakfast with my journal or my whatever, my camera, and just kind of hang out. And I was the only female in there the whole day. So it was strange.
Hmm. Anything, as we wrap this up, anything that we really need to make sure we tell people about this kind of adventure?
Well, I would say, and we kind of touched upon this a little bit, for women that want to travel, I've met a lot of them through my blog, people that I don't know that have just written me that said they want to do this type of stuff. My advice to them is do it. It's extremely daunting, and you have to fight through any fears that you have, but when you do, it's completely worth it. And it kind of comes back to everything does work itself out. You're going to meet people. You're going to have fun. You're going to have times where you don't like it, but that's okay. They're short, hopefully. But I would just encourage anyone to go do this, and especially women who might be afraid of traveling on their own or, wondering, well, I can't go out to eat by myself or whatever. It's great because it's actually when you're traveling alone, you are more approachable than ever. And so you tend to meet more people, good people, some bad people too, but you can get rid of them. But you tend to meet more good people and make more friends when you travel alone. And I am a firm believer in that. Because the few times I have traveled with my friends, I don't meet nearly as many locals. I don't meet nearly as many other travelers. So it's really a fun time if you're up for that type of adventure and you like to meet new people. So that's probably my biggest piece of advice is, if you're sitting there and thinking, oh, I don't know if I could do this, it's really possible. And it's all very worth it.
Just in closing, the biggest surprise from this experience?
The biggest surprise for me is that I still don't have the desire to go home. That sounds kind of strange, but it's the part that kind of took me by surprise. I really thought that I would be really wanting to come home, and everyone always asks me, are you homesick? Do you miss home? Do you miss your family, your friends, whatever? And of course I miss my family and friends, but I still am not ready to go home. I think the other big surprise, and this kind of goes hand in hand with it, is I found that I absolutely love traveling in developing countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big surprise to me because that was the part that I really didn't know if I could hack it or not. And to me, the more difficult, the better. I was actually supposed to be at this point, I was supposed to be in Europe because I thought the last half of my travel I was going to do Europe. And I did arrive in Europe in April and I absolutely hated it.
Oh no.
I shouldn't say hated it. It was great, but I desperately wanted to get back to more developing countries.
Okay.
So I changed all my plans to go to Spain and Germany and so on, and ended up in Northern Africa and in India. And now I'm going to Laos and China next. So that's where I just love it. It's fun. You get to see, when you get into a developing country, you see the world again through like a new set of eyes. It resets your whole, all of your assumptions. And when you come back out of a developing country into kind of more the Western world, it once again, you see the world through a new set of eyes. Everything is just astonishing to you. And it's just, I love that feeling. That's been very surprising. I never knew that about myself before I left.
Interesting. Well, Sherry, thank you very much for coming on the show and telling us about your adventure. It sounds like if we contact you in a year, you may still be out on the road doing this, or when
maybe.
Do you? You don't know when you're going home or where home is anymore.
That's a hard question. I am actually planning on going back, I think, in the beginning of December. I would like to spend the holidays back in the States again.
Okay.
But I just have this feeling that I don't know how long I'm going to stay, but I have to figure out how I can make money at this the next time around. So
right.
We'll see how it goes, but I will come home at least for a little while.
Well, thanks so much for coming and joining us. And again, the blog is Aunt's World. Check that out. And Sherry didn't say, because she'd be too shy too, I imagine, but she's a wonderful writer and really brings you along on her trip. So check that out. And thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
After my interview with Sherry, she and I continued to talk for probably about half an hour about various things, about trying to help her get some advertising for her blog, for instance, so that she could continue to stay on the road if she was interested. And she mentioned something, and I thought I had stopped recording, but I actually had continued to record the conversation. So here is a story that she told about how she originally wrote me and we arranged this interview.
But I probably should have said something on the interview about, I mean, really how I ended up writing you was, I was truly on a local bus in Morocco and everyone was sick around me. And all
I was
trying to do was just stay calm about the whole thing. And I'm listening to the podcast. I'm trying to write, you know, like, oh, it was horrendous. It was a 4-hour ride from hell.
Oh, no.
But that's what made me actually finally write you and go, oh, thank God, I'm listening to something that's keeping my mind off of everything else going on.
And I would like to apologize for the weird noise in the background there, which is an artifact. There was a lot of noise on this particular interview. We were talking to her from Shanghai, which I don't think we mentioned. So I guess we should be glad we could talk to her at all. I have one internet resource for you for today's show, and that is a site called survivalphrases.com. If you're going to Vietnam, like Sherry talked about, and you're interested in learning just a little Vietnamese, this might be a place for you. It is a site that does have a membership fee, so I do want to bring that up because that may make it inappropriate, but it's $25 for a lifetime for one language, and then if you do want to do 5 different languages, that would be $70. So there are several, it looks like there are a number of lessons that you can download for free if you just want to get a taste of it. So survivalphrases.com, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. In news from community, I have some preliminary results from the survey. Probably the only thing that surprised me is that almost half the people, or even over half the people who responded when I asked about the pictures in the iTunes enhanced version, said they didn't know. And the reason that's surprising is that the bulk of you who listen to the show are listening to the iTunes enhanced version. By far, the number of people who get that version is greater than the people who get the MP3 version. And it might be that you're just listening to this on a shuffle or something that doesn't have a screen and therefore just don't have that opportunity. But if you are listening in iTunes on your computer, or if you are listening on a computer that, or if you are listening on an iPod with a screen, then there are pictures that you can see along with this. And on iTunes, there are also links that you can go directly to many of the stories or many of the things we're talking about. And I do spend about an hour a week doing that, so it'd be good if you knew. And I'll probably put together a little video tutorial about what that's like, how that works. And there is right now a tutorial on the show. If you're interested in doing that, especially in iTunes, there's a tutorial on the show that shows you how. So anyway, check that out. Next week, I will be in Southern California at the Podcasting and New Media Expo. If you're going to be down there, let me know. Drop me an email, and maybe we could get together. I'm also looking for someone who listens to the show who's an Acura owner, who gets the Acura magazine. I understand that they mentioned the Amateur Traveler, and I don't know what they said. So I'm looking for someone who can tell me that. Thanks. I got a comment from Maurice on episode 102, was about the Cinque Terre. He said, in part, I just listened to the show and it's great as always. I've been there myself in 2003 during my 4-month stay in Venice and 1 month in Padua. I had a great time in Italy and in general in Venice. It's my love. I could stay there for years. Really, wow. Great buildings, lovely plazas, amazing art, food from heaven. During my stay there, we also went to the Cinque Terre. We spent some time in Rio Maggiore, where we rented a home just above the harbor. I loved it. We went there by car and parked it in a parking garage in the higher part of the town, so I was a bit surprised to hear you say that you can't reach it by car. The story I was told that in the old days you could only reach the Cinque Terre by boat or walking over the land, but nowadays you could reach it as well by car, but I'm not sure all the towns are reachable by car. And you're right, Maurice, and it turns out Rio Maggiore is one of the two southernmost of the five towns and that are reachable by us by car. The residents can go to all the towns, I believe, at this point, but I believe tourists can only go to the two southernmost towns. And we thought about doing it, so I can't believe that I forgot it. But thank you for correcting me there. And speaking of the Cinque Terre, Steve from ExitRowSeat.com, which is a travel blog that I pay attention to, sent me an email a little while back about his video. It's a slideshow that he shot in Vernazza, which was my favorite of the five towns in the Cinque Terre. So you might check out that link. I'll put in the show notes at AmateurTraveler.com. And with that, we'll wrap up this show. As always, I'd love to hear from you, host@amateurtraveler.com, or call the comment line either by using Skype to Chris Twice, ChristWice, or calling the number 408-8494-POD. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.